Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Teresa. And we're talking with the people who are growing, raising, harvesting, and producing food here in our bountiful coastal region.
And also to those who are selling, cooking, serving, and eating the freshest food available in our communities.
Join us today in a conversation about what's in season right now here on the North Coast.
Today we're talking with Carol Carver and George Exum of Islands Inn Farm on Puget Island in Washington, in the middle of the Columbia. Welcome, George and Carol.
Thank you both.
Yeah.
So we're wondering how you ended up here on the North Coast, and you have kind of an interesting story. So George, I'm going to start with you.
All right. Well, 1977, when Carol and I got married, we lived in California, and we decided to start looking for land, and we made our way through Northern California, Southern Oregon, and ended up with an engineer friend of mine here on the river, and we went salmon fishing, and it was the end of the season, so we took his sailboat back up the river and went past Puget Island. And I had been on Puget Island years before and mentioned to Carol to come up out of the rain into the rain to see Puget Island. And we then proceeded on to Mount Rainier, where we were backpacking, and it was a whiteout and just solid Stockton cloud. So we went back to the island, found a piece of property, and started the process to buy it. In 1978, we moved to Puget Island.
And so, were there a lot of places on Puget Island?
Well, there were two places.
Two places.
Puget Island. And we were looking for, as we did this drive north, we were looking for a place with a good southerly exposure. Mm-hmm. We knew we wanted to be growing, so we were looking for a place that, A, we could afford, and B, we would be able to just start growing right away.
Were you thinking about commercial production at that point,
no,
or was it just like growing for yourselves?
Yeah, we
like
were thinking about sustainability and, mm-hmm. you know, feeding ourselves and kids, we hoped, and my parents who spent time with us. So
were you both from California? Were you from California
Neither
too?
Neither of us.
Oh, okay. You just landed there.
I'm from New Jersey. George is from New York. We met in New York. But George really liked the West Coast. And it was pretty clear to me very early on, like 1971, that if I wanted a life with George, I was going to need to
like the West Coast.
Fortunately, I love it.
Yeah.
So you started in on growing, but before that, weren't you an extension agent?
No, I was an extension agent about a year after we moved to Waukegan County.
That's great.
WSU agent for 6 or 7 years.
That's wonderful.
And yeah. What was happening on Puget Island back in the 70s? What was it like? Has it changed
when
much?
When you went
to
a community meeting, there were still people speaking Norwegian.
Oh, that's so great.
The community meetings were extremely boisterous, lots of debate.
Wow.
Everybody, of course, knew everybody else, and we were unusual.
What did they think? How did you fit in?
It kind of was summed up by our real estate agent. When we went to sign the papers in our two different last names, his comment was, "I've heard about people like you, but you're the first ones I've ever met." And so
we were pretty
unusual to people.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, at that time, there were a lot of dairies, which have gone away. There's two working dairies on Puget Island now, and probably when we moved here, there were 10.
Wow.
Oh, that's too bad.
And so did you commute off the island for work, or did you started growing right away, or?
No, my work, I was an engineer on ships, so I worked 50 days on, 50 days off.
Oh, that's great. What a schedule. Wow.
Intense, but
I'm thinking not so.
Yeah, it was great to have those 50 days home. It was the 50 days on the ship that weren't
with little kids. And
yeah, that must have been incredible. So you raised your family there.
Yeah.
And when did you start to think about having this be like a farm in a sense of like maybe we should sell some of what we're growing? When did that transition happen for you guys?
I think that when we realized, or maybe when I realized, that I was going to have to grow less or figure out what to do with the surplus.
Uh-huh.
Because we were basically feeding three families. Plus, I had a job where I had a really good way to distribute surplus through through my work, and the job was gone, the kids were gone, and I didn't want to stop growing. So
we are so lucky.
Yeah. So when was that? How long ago was that when you transitioned?
4 years ago.
And where were some of your first outlets? Where did you start selling?
We sold a little bit at the Cowlitz Farmers Market, and we really, really got our start at the island, the Two Islands Market on Puget Island.
Such a sweet market.
It is. And
they just started up.
Lovely people.
Yeah,
a couple weeks ago, right?
Last week.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Tomorrow is their second day.
That is wonderful. Well, so we're kicking off market season, and the River People Farmers Market, where you are vendors, much beloved and an anchor of the market, and that is starting up on June 20th on Thursday afternoon from 3 to 6. And so what are you going to be bringing to that first market?
Well, as much as we can. My memory is not the greatest these days, so I brought a list.
Yay!
This list is from a newsletter that we send out weekly that people can pre-order if they want to, which really helps us out because then we can have their orders together. And we decided we would not do a CSA because we didn't want to have that kind of a commitment.
Uh-huh.
So this is our alternative to a CSA, is just people being able to choose a few days ahead of time, which
so
gives
how
us
that,
an idea how much to pick.
So you send out an email, you have an email list, and you
we
send
do.
It out and you say, this is what we have, and then people can pick from that and they let
right.
you know, this is what I'd like to purchase, and you pack it up and bring it to market, and then they pick it up there?
Right.
And do they have to pay you in advance, or do they pay you at the market?
No, they pay us at the market, and it has worked out fabulously. We have never had a problem. And people can either email... They can get our email off our website if they want to sign up for the list, or they can just sign up at the market.
Yeah. That's so great. That's a great idea. It's a really creative way of dealing with it.
And
so
we also sell out of the farm. I mean,
I was going to say, don't you leave boxes on the back porch too?
And or coolers or, you know, whatever. And it's worked. We have a number of regular customers on, you know, in the Cathlamet, Puget Island area.
So they just stop by the farm and buy stuff directly from there.
That's really great.
So some of the things that we're going to be able to bring are green garlic and leekscapes and garlic scapes.
Oh, so nice.
And we hope to have leekscape pesto.
Ooh, nice.
We will have some basil. It's from the Hoop House.
Yeah.
Yay, Hoop Houses, I'll tell you. I don't know what we would have done without it this year.
Yeah.
A little bit of broccoli. We've got some very nice baby chard and four different kinds of kale. That's nice. Spring kale is so tender.
It's the best.
Very nice. Lettuce mix, purslane for the first time this year. We've really been enjoying it ourselves, and we've got some surplus of that we'll be bringing.
And for those who don't know what purslane is, do you want to
describe it? Well, you know, until about a year ago, I thought it was a devil of a weed, and I have
it learned. It is a devil of a weed.
I have
and
learned.
And yet an edible.
Yeah, I've learned that the weedy version is edible, and there's also culinary versions that have bigger leaves, which is what we're growing, and it's just a powerhouse of all different kinds of vitamins and omega-3. It's a really good plant source of omega-3s. We are going to have tatsai. Boy, that likes rain, and it's doing very well.
Yeah.
Snap peas, rhubarb, and then our jams and jellies and ferments.
So I love this, that you guys do this incredible value-add product line, which seems to expand every time I see you at the market. It seems like you've got some other new product. So what exactly are you doing? I'm going to look at George for this. So,
well, I'll tell you the story of how we started the ferments as part of the come-on. We were wine tasting at a place in California, and I was telling the person about fennel wine, which I make, and she said, wait a second, I got to get the boss. And the owner of the winery came out, and we started talking about fermenting vegetables, and he said, oh, hold on. And he went back in the kitchen, and he brought out a plate of fermented turnips and different other vegetables, and he said, oh, yeah, I just love fermenting vegetables. And we came back and decided, well, we ought to try that. And so right now we have three different kimchis, four different kimchis.
And what are they?
It's regular kimchi, a Thai spice kimchi, a hot Thai spice kimchi, and then sometimes during the season, according to how well it's growing, we have a Savoy kimchi. Mm-hmm. And
explain for people who don't know what kimchi is.
It's basically Asian sauerkraut, mm-hmm. With a little more spice, a little more heat, and rather than green cabbage, which is the standard for sauerkraut, use Savoy or Napa or a combination of both, mm-hmm. Along with your spices, and we do a different version than say they do in Korea, where they age it much longer. We do a shorter aging period, and over there they frequently use fish oil, which gives it a very distinctive odor and flavor, which some people like and some people don't. But we don't use fish oil in ours, and it's been well received.
It's delicious,
both around here and
really delicious.
And other markets. It's doing well.
And you're selling that at the Astoria Co-op, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So if people want to try it, okay.
So has that become more of a thing than you thought it was going to? I mean, that's a lot of kimchi you're making.
The crocks are full all the time.
Well, that's good. Well, I guess that's good. I hope that's good.
It's a little bit of it's obviously labor intensive. But we're not going to go up, steps higher than our own manual labor because it would become too much of an issue.
What other value add stuff do you guys process and sell?
The pestos. We start with
so
the
good.
Arugula sorrel, and the arugula's almost gone. We're hoping we have time.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool enough
right.
weather to have some more of that. Then we also make the leek scape pesto and basil.
And garlic scape pesto.
Yes.
Garlic scape. I love garlic scapes.
And explain what garlic scapes are for people who don't know.
That's the flower stalk, and the leek scape is the flower stalk.
So you snap that off
right.
before,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of a way to keep the energy going back into the bulb for the garlic.
True,
or
you can use the whole stem.
Yeah,
and it's just a wonderful flavor.
So those are your savory value add products, and then what else?
We make jams and jellies, mm-hmm. and they're probably the least healthy things that we make. So we have been working on, first of all, we always use unsprayed fruit, and then we use organic cane sugar. And now we're using Pomona's pectin, which enables you to mm-hmm. use less
it's
sugar.
And it is
still,
really great.
And still get a gel. So we're working on making jams and jellies with less sugar.
I think I recall having one. Was it a plum butter that I don't think you had any sugar in it?
Right. The butters, well, they do have a little, but just a
hint.
Yeah.
And it was sweet tart and mm-hmm. Was that the yellow plum or
no?
That was an
Italian plum, but the actual what we call that Lekvar. It's a roasted plum, and then
Ooh.
It's made into a jam after we
Ooh.
Roast the plums.
Oh. It was really, really good. Really,
that
really
sounds
good.
Amazing.
And then George has this whole other line of stuff, which I know you don't sell, but we can't not talk about it, which is here in the studio and kind of eyeballing me. So, and it's wine. You make wine?
Yes, I do. Well, I can't say only fruit wines because I do vegetable wines also.
And you have described some really strange vegetables that you turn into wine. And it seems like you can turn anything into wine.
I think you can.
What made you start making wine out of vegetables?
Like fennel. I mean, who would think of fennel?
Just because we had a lot of fennel.
Yeah.
It wasn't
that's
moving.
Not necessarily the logical thing. It's like I have a whole bunch of fennel. I think I'll make some wine out of it.
We
so
like
but is
that
it the similar
flavor?
Is it so it is a similar process to making wine out of grapes?
Grapes are the only fruit that has all the sugar in them mm-hmm. for the fermentation. So all the wines I make require adding sugar for the fermentation process.
Wow.
And I've gotten it sort of honed down to I do it in steps, and it's a longer fermentation process.
Well, we're going to take a quick station break. You are listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, and streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you are just joining us, we're talking to Carol Carver and George Ixum of Islands Inn Farm on Puget Island. And we've just been talking about wine. And so I have this question. Have you ever tried to make wine out of something that didn't turn out?
I've made a few that didn't turn out. I have one right now that didn't turn out.
But it's not a certain ingredient. It just happens to be maybe
What are some of your favorite ones that you've made?
Well, fennel ranks up there. Consistently, blackberry is excellent, and it's all over the place there, mm-hmm. And it makes a great product. Mm-hmm. Raspberry.
Elderberry, yeah. Great antiviral.
Yeah,
and I think that fennel, the thing that shocked me about it was how dry it really, you really do get kind of a dry, piquant wine. You wouldn't necessarily think that, and it had a lot of flavor. So the fruits, you sort of expect lots of flavor, mm-hmm. but...
My unusual wine of the new period is a parsnip hop wine.
Oh, really?
Parsnip and hops?
mm-hmm. Oof. And?
Okay.
I'll let you know before the end of the market.
That sounds interesting. Okay. I can see parsnips, but... Wow, okay. I want to hear about that one.
I picked a very, very floral hop, which I got here in Astoria at Hondo's. Uh-huh. And I told them what I was going to do. So they picked something that was a very floral, strong hop.
Interesting. Wow. I can hardly wait.
That sounds fascinating.
One thing I love about your farm is it's so diverse. When I came out to visit your farm, I was kind of blown away that you had citrus, and I know that it lives in the greenhouse part of the year, but still, it was definitely citrus, and there was actually quite an abundance of it. And then then you have chickens, and you have kind of a interesting heritage breed.
We raise Buckeyes, which are a Midwestern breed that almost went extinct. When we started with them, they were endangered. And enough people in the country are raising them now that they've moved up to threatened.
Oh, wow.
It's a really nice, heavy, dual-purpose, friendly chicken. So we like our Buckeyes. That's the only kind of chickens that we have.
And you sell eggs at the market, too.
We do. Yes, and we hope the ladies keep laying.
How many chickens do you have?
Right now we have about 30, but only half of them are laying. Yeah. The other half hopefully will kick in by August.
Yeah. So I have to ask, how big is your place? How big is your property?
5 acres.
Wow, that's
that
a
was
lot
part of
that you're
the
doing
5 acres
of...
in independence thing that was big at the end of the 70s. Yeah.
And how much do you have, would you say that you have under production?
Probably
one.
Yeah, probably 1 acre.
Wow.
Very intensively.
That's a lot
planted.
That you harvest off of 1 acre.
And we have one 55 by 20 hoop house and then three smaller hoop houses.
Wow.
And we're so thankful for them.
And it makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
It does.
It's amazing. So when you started out, did you not have any hoop houses?
We have always used temporary high tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always gardened year-round, which is one of the things that's such a blessing about living
yes.
here. Mm-hmm. With some protection, you can do that.
Yeah.
But we're happy to have hoop houses that are staying put even when the wind blows.
And climate between here and Puget Island, I mean, you think you're wetter? You think you're... It seems like I think you get a little bit more sun, a little more warmth.
You've got to be warmer.
We probably get a little more sun, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we break out of the fog before the coast, for mm-hmm. sure. And
I think you get more rain than we do, too, although we get a lot, 90 inches some years.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this has been a wet spring. We were talking a little earlier. What were you saying? How many?
Well, I mean, just last night on the radio, I mean, on the TV, they said that in Portland anyway, which I, you know, would extrapolate also for out here, was the second wettest since 1872.
Goodness.
Which is hard to believe since we had 10 days of sun at the beginning of the month.
Hot sun, really hot sun.
It has been a weird month. It's really strange to go from 90 degrees and sunny to 50 degrees and pouring down rain in the space of a week.
I've noticed the difference in the garden in terms of plants, and where I'm noticing it is in the garlic and leekscapes, which are, to me, out way, way earlier than, I mean, that used to be a staple of the market into July.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's not going to be.
Actually, half our garlic has escaped and all of our leeks.
Wow.
Wow. That seems really early.
Yeah.
Ours isn't quite gone off yet, but it's starting to. And I remember being really surprised and thinking, this is not right. This should not be happening this early. But I think you're right. That early heat shock in the beginning of the month was just crazy.
I think I'm also seeing biennials that are starting to go to bloom.
Earlier.
You know, in a whole row of cabbage, there'll be three or four that are bolting, and they shouldn't be.
That's that hot and cool
they
thing
they think
that
they're
happens.
Into their second year already.
it's a little disconcerting.
The challenges of growing here, for sure. So in this very diverse crops, I should say, that you have, what are you doing that's new? Do you try something new every year? And
we try new varieties every year, and it doesn't make it easy for us.
So hard.
We grow about 30 different kinds of tomatoes, and it's just, I don't know, it's a challenge that we just love to see what works the best. Only we never really find what works the best because we always want to try something new.
Yeah.
What is your favorite tomato?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure I could answer that. I love one called Cosmonaut Volkov, which is a Eastern European, well, I guess it's a Russian tomato, but it's relatively early and has produced very strongly for us over the years. We save our own seeds. We originally got the seed from Seed Savers Exchange and then have kept them going. And that's, I guess that comes to my mind. How about for you?
I love them all. I just go out and pick them off the vine. And
oh, they are so, so good.
I know. That's definitely a reason to have a hoop house.
Yeah. I like Stupis just because of the size and it's like,
they do well here.
And they do well here.
It's a good
guaranteed
workhorse.
Early tomato. And I like this little yellow and red striped plum.
German striped
German striped plum.
Sounds good. And so you save your own seed. Do you do that for all your crops?
No. We do it for the easy ones. we don't, you know, some things you really have to isolate to save seed. So we just save seed from things you don't have to worry about. We save a lot of lettuce seed, a lot of endive, things that make
hot peppers, which we do isolate.
Things that make it through the winter, we think are good ones to let go to seed.
It's a challenge here sometimes, letting things go long enough to be able to harvest the seed. Because I know a lot of times it starts to rain, you know, just at the time that you would be wanting to harvest the seed, and then the seed's just too wet and it's destroyed. So it's such a challenge.
Chard
in our climate
is an easy one.
That's
because
right. Yeah,
that holds off until the spring before it bolts.
Yeah.
So we're both going to jump in at the same time.
I think we're probably thinking alike.
Recipes?
What are you cooking?
Yeah.
What are you cooking from what you're harvesting right now?
Well, George does most of the cooking. So
our new favorite vegetable right now
is, I'm looking at it,
daikon radish.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
They brought one into the studio, and it's the most amazing, beautiful thing.
They're about 3/4 of a pound. They're averaging about 3/4 of a pound.
So it's a long white radish. It almost looks like, you could say it's a long white carrot, but not. It's not pointy at one end. It's sort of all one cylinder.
Right. And I've been matchsticking that and adding it to all manner of stir-fried greens.
Mm-hmm.
And using the greens from it.
And the greens are actually great in stir fries also.
So can you have it raw and cooked? It goes
both
ways?
We almost always have it just to munch on and with almost every meal. It's just a really nice. And we haven't raised them much because with a lot of root vegetables around here, we have infestations and we have not gotten a handle on that, but so they get some, and that just means we eat those if they're damaged. Unfortunately, people don't like damaged products in the marketplace, so we're eating the ones that we can't sell.
Well, the thing that really struck me about this is how sweet and mild this daikon is. I mean, it just makes me wonder. I've never grown it before, but the ones I typically get are harsher, I would say. And so this was just
like a more
delightful.
Spicy flavor, do you think?
Yeah, I think much more, this one was much milder, and it was spicy. I mean, there is definitely a little kick, but it's got a sweetness that's really beautiful and not a harshness. It's a beautiful
vegetable.
It's
almost like jicama.
Yeah, it almost is.
Just a little bit of a flavor of radish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love it raw.
Is it winter? Do you think that that's a variety, or is it just where you're growing it? Because I know sometimes in certain climates and certain soils, things don't get as spicy as in other climates. And so do you think is it this strain of daikon radish, or is it your soil?
I'm not sure. I'm going to try it again. It's a 60-day vegetable. So I'm going to try it again and have it mature in the hot weather and see if that makes a difference. It might be a stronger flavor with
so maybe
the hot
when it's
weather.
Ripening in the cool weather it's not quite as spicy. It's delicious. For anyone who hasn't tried it, I definitely encourage you to find some, because it's wonderful, and I could see it being so flexible. I mean, adding it to stir fries would be delicious. Having it just raw, it's got a really nice flavor. I'm excited to get some from you this year.
So what else are you cooking with your, besides you're doing salads, and anything else on your farm that you're really cooking up?
Well, frittata, anything that uses greens, anything that uses greens that are seconds.
Uh-huh.
We always mention to woofers that we eat everything on the farm, but we often eat seconds, and Teresa probably knows what I mean.
Absolutely.
And, there's lots of things that are holy, that are perfectly good to eat.
Yeah, so. Yeah. You take the beautiful stuff to market, and the stuff that's not so beautiful, you cook up, and it's fantastic. A lot of times, I mean, I don't notice
doesn't taste
difference.
Any different than the, you know, the one that looks perfect.
No, and it's interesting. I think a lot of times for home gardeners, there's things that you would eat out of your home garden that you would never pay for at a market or a supermarket, but really it's because we're looking at aesthetics. If we want to buy something, we want it to be beautiful. So,
and I'm hoping people get more accustomed to buying things that aren't totally flawless, because what it means when you look at things and you see those holes is that they were grown organically.
Right.
And hopefully you're not going to see the critter that made the hole. But.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much to both of you for joining us on today's Food Talk. And Teresa, do you have some announcements?
Well, I just want to have everyone put it on your calendars. The month of June is when the local coastal farmers markets pretty much all begin. I believe Manzanita is starting the second week in June. I think it's June 14th, Friday, June 14th. Their market's from 5 to 8. And Cannon Beach is on Tuesday the 18th. And that's from 2 to 5.
Mm-hmm. 2 to 5.
Food at 1, prepared foods at 1, and then River People starting on Thursday, June 20th, and that's from 3 to 6. I should know this.
Yes.
I'm embarrassed to say. 3 to 6.
3 to 6.
And you'll be able to see George and Carol there. If you want to check out their website, tell us what your website is.
It's www.islandsandfarm.com.
Okay, and you can
Perfect.
Sign up for their email list if you want to pre-order anything. Thank you so much. It was great to hear what's
great
going on your farm.
Great to have you here.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank you.
And just to let everybody know, this show will be available as a podcast at coastradio.org.